I can't say that I was surprised, but I knew that it had to be one of us, to tell you the truth. Show brought to you by Fantrax. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to follow me on Twitter or interact live with the show, which you can do for any of these shows as they're going to air, they all go to air live on YouTube. You can tweet at me at @redrock_beeble. That is my Twitter handle. It has always been my Twitter handle, and it will continue to be my Twitter handle. So tweet at me if you're watching live, or if you have any other questions at any stage throughout the day, the night, free agency starting, any sort of questions that you've got. We are here for this podcast today, a day before free agency starts. We will be doing some free agency podcasts in the next couple of days, probably the next 3 days or so after the first few days of transactions have gone through. What we're doing now is trying to, let's be honest, myself and my co-host, who I should introduce now, Matt Smith from Basketball Monster. Matt, how are you going?
Very well, JLo. How are you?
I'm pretty good. We've been getting out the old crystal ball. We've been, it's fair to say, polishing our balls, Matt, just to get them nice and crystal clear, ready to prognosticate the future here. We're looking at players who didn't, and we look at their overall rankings, and a lot of projections and rankings are based on the previous seasons from a lot of different places. These guys finished lower down, so yeah, outside that top 100 range, probably not players who were drafted necessarily or players who didn't end up on teams. And we're looking for players who might become the next CJ McCollum, that might become the next Will Barton, that might become the next Kent Bazemore. We're trying to look at players who finished low in the rankings, who have a chance to jump up. Now, there's still free agency to come, so there's lots of things that can change. But we're going to address a few individual situations, talk about these players and how they might jump up, what's in their favor to jump up, whether they will or not, or just percentage chances. That's maybe so you can make a trade, make an early adjustment to your line of thinking on some of these guys. Is that an accurate way of describing it, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, with free agency less than 24 hours away, everything could change tomorrow, just like it did on draft day with the Thunder and Magic trade with Ibaka and Oladipo. We both agree that Oladipo's value took a hit, while Ibaka's probably a little jump up. But then if Kevin Durant leaves OKC, then that changes things again. So yeah, like I said, it could all change in 24 hours time, but we'll give it a go and see how we come out the other side of free agency.
Quickly mentioning or talking on what you just mentioned there about the changes that free agency can have to values, many of you would have seen that ESPN put out 2017 fantasy basketball rankings. I think last year they did it about October 20th, so it is obviously a lot earlier, but it's I don't want to comment on them too much. You would have seen them and formed your own opinions, but the one thing I do want to say is, A, it's too early. They've got Pau Gasol at Chicago. They've got Joakim Noah at Chicago. They're not going to play in Chicago. The rankings and the projections do not marry up whatsoever. They make no sense. Kobe Bryant is still in the projections. This is, and again, I'm not going to go into it in detail, but what I'm trying to tell you is, if you've got a draft coming up or you're trying to work out trade values, do not use these projections. Do not use these rankings. They are incorrect. And some of them might end up being correct, but the actual value of the numbers that they project versus the rankings on the list, they don't make any sense. Anthony Davis is projected to be better than Karl Anthony Towns in every single category, yet he's ranked two spots below him. Don't use these. But by all means, Matt, send them to your league mates. Hey guys, let's get the draft kicked off. ESPN's got their projections out. Send them to those guys. Don't use them yourself, and then your draft mates will make quite a few mistakes.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, yeah, it's too early to do projections, but here we are sitting here trying to predict, what, 4 months into the future. So, yeah, it was strange that they came out at this point of time. Like, if they came out in 2-3 weeks, then it would have been fine because free agency's over and everything sort of settled down. But, it is what it is. At least it gives us something to talk about.
We're going to do our Basketball Monster projections throughout August with a hopefully open date towards the middle to end of August, most likely. Once everything has really settled down and we know where people are and get an idea of rotations, which will continue to be tweaked throughout the months leading up to the end of October. But just, again, it's just a warning. those rankings, those projections, they don't add up. So don't rely upon them in your draft, which you may. And again, there's no rookies even included in those projections whatsoever either. So again, it makes no sense. So don't go and use those. Matt, you and me are in the Red Rock Dynasty League, and that league is hosted on Fantrax, as you're well aware. Now, what else do you know about Fantrax, Matt? It is the best place to host a league, especially if you've got complex settings that you have. How have you noticed the Fantrax, the revamp of their site, I guess?
Yeah, the revamp of their site has improved it quite a bit. I think they did that probably a few months ago now, sort of towards the back end of our season. It was the first year of our Dynasty League. And especially for Dynasty Leagues, when we're doing salaries, contracts, multi-team trades, trades with draft picks, those sort of things, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to have all those settings there. So I know you've got them on board there now, and they're a sponsor, and we're going to have a heap more leagues on there in terms of the Red Rock Listener Leagues. So yeah, go and check it out, see what you think, and join in.
And when you sign up on Fantrax, which I suggest you go and do, and take your leagues over there, because the settings, as Matt mentioned, everything you can do, everything you wished you could do on any of the other sites, is capable. Three-team trades you can do. You can have contracts. You can stash players. You can trade draft picks into the future without having a pesky Google Doc sitting on the side that a commissioner has to meticulously maintain. You can do all that at Fantrax. And when you sign up, use the promo code REDROCK, and you go in with a chance to win yourself $100 worth of Fantrax cash, which enables you to pay for a premium league up front, which enables all those great features. And there's heaps, still heaps. It's got the most features of any free league, but the premium stuff is fantastic. Salaries, contracts, all that sort of stuff is tremendous. You can have anything you would have dreamed about in a fantasy league, you can do on Fantrax. Matt, let's get stuck straight into this. We've got a list of guys here we're going to talk about. Some of them I have spoken about in the Rookie Review podcast two shows ago, and then the fourth year potential breakout podcast. So I won't speak massively on those guys, because you can go and reference my thoughts there, but I'll get your thoughts on those players. Let's start with a player that we were both pretty excited about last season. Fair to say that he was probably your fantasy boyfriend heading into the year, and that is Nikola Mirotic, who was disappointing. I think that's a fair way of putting it. Some of it his own fault, some of it Fred Hoiberg related, and I think a majority Fred Hoiberg related. What do you see from Mirotic this season?
I'd like to see what I was seeing at the beginning of last season and this time last season when Mirotic was there and Hoiberg took over, and we thought he was going to play a bit more up-tempo offense, use Mirotic at the small forward, power forward, and give him a license to shoot, and he gave him about 2 or 3 minutes to shoot, and then if he didn't make a couple of buckets, he dragged him and put him on the bench. So like you said, it was a disappointing season, but he still finished a top 100 player, which despite that disappointing season and a major injury there as well, where he spent a number of weeks on the sidelines, it wasn't a complete disaster for Nikola Mirotic. And even in 15 games where he played at least 30 minutes last season, still talking, he averaged 22 points, over 6 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 1.1 blocks, and 4 threes per game. So we know if he can get the minutes, then the fantasy value is there. No Joakim Noah, no Pau Gasol. I think Robin Lopez will really help him and make up for his defensive liabilities. But I'm expecting, like I said, what I expected last season, and I'll be trying to draft Nikola Mirotic in as many legs as I can once again.
And you could have got him, not you could have, you probably would have had to take him in some spots inside the top 50. I think we had him ranked about 42nd. He ended up post All-Star as the 55th ranked player. So he did come home strongly when they started to give him more minutes when Gasol had some injury problems and obviously Noah was out. He was dreadfully mismanaged, in my opinion. He is the second best player on the Bulls quite comfortably. He is a key barometer, and he's a player that there's a lot of hatred from many people, fantasy-wise and real-life-wise. I don't think that they fully grasp the importance of what he could do or actually how good he can become. To me, he has got a real shot to be a top 50 player, and there is zero chance you will need to draft him inside the top 50. And if someone does take him ahead of you in the top 50, you go, okay, fair enough, that's fine. But I reckon you can grab 80s, 90s would probably be the early prediction there. But he can get hot, he can get blocks, he can get rebounds, he can hit threes, he shoots a great free throw percentage, his 3-point percentage was fantastic last season. And he's going to have to take probably even a bigger role heading into his third season. So I like the pick. He's going to have a big season. I'm pretty confident in that, Matty. Rod Hood, one of my boys. We're going to move from one of your boys to one of my boys. Rod Hood had a pretty significant season, and I think some people will look to it. Probably not the listeners to this podcast, but some people will look at it and go, yeah, because Alec Burks was injured. I don't think that was the case. Do you?
No, I don't. I think it was just, natural development for Rodney Hood, and I think we'll see him take another leap again this coming season. He increased his points and threes quite significantly, and this season will be if he can increase his rebounds, his assists, and his steals in particular, playing on the wing. We know they've added George Hill in that backcourt, but I don't think that'll impact Rodney Hood too much, and that front court's pretty stable with Gobert and Favors and Hayward on the wing next to him, so I'm expecting a pretty good season once again out of Rodney Hood.
Yeah, I think Hood's heading into that third season, which is a great time for players to really break out. He already averaged 14.5 points. There's no reason for me that he can't be a 16 or 17 point guy. He hit 2 threes a game. He could average 3 to 3.5 assists per game as well, because we know that the Jazz do like to share that ball handling role around, which makes Hill perfect for this team, because he can play on the ball, off the ball as well, and Hood and Hayward handle it. And Burks stagnated despite the injuries which he suffered the last couple of years, and Hood is the better player. He's comfortably the better player in my mind, and it relegates Burks. It relegates Burke to a completely zero role, but it relegates Burks to a sixth man, 24, 25 minute a game sort of role. I think that's probably where he's best suited, whereas Hood has the makings of a real star on his hands, and he's got an opportunity to become a top 50 player. Everything you said there is correct about what we can possibly expect from Rod next season. Jabari Parker. He was terrible to start the season, and it completely understandable. Coming back from an ACL injury in what amounts to basically the second half of his rookie season, he played until January in his rookie season, tore that ACL, came back and struggled tremendously defensively, just struggled offensively. But the second half of the season from Jabari was pretty impressive. He did finish outside the top 110, but he had a nice almost top 80 second half of the season. Actually was top 75 in 8-cat post All-Star, and he's got a real chance to push maybe not top 50, but push at least another two rounds higher than that. We saw that the core of Adetokounmpo and Chris Middleton, along with Parker, that is clearly their core of the future. The 2, 3, and 4. Yeah, Parker's not going to be a world-beating rebounder. We know that. He's not going to be a world-beating defender. But what he can do is he gets steals at a pretty high rate, and his steal rate actually dropped from his rookie season, so I could see that bouncing back. Good percentages. He's not going to really trouble anyone from three, but scoring, okay rebounds, nice steals, good percentages. And you could see maybe an improvement in his three-point game as he heads into his third season. This is basically the second season for Jabari Parker now.
Yeah, I really like Jabari Parker coming into his third season. And just looking at some numbers, his season stats, 14 points, 5 rebounds, just the one steal. And then if you take that and you talked about his strong second half of the season, post-All-Star break, he increased that to 19 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 50% from the field, 76% from the free throw line, and as you said, ranked inside the top 80 in the final 2 months of the season. So some people will look at the numbers and the stats as a whole across the season. I really like to use those post All-Star break stats to give me some sort of indication of what they can do once they've sort of settled into that team, barring any massive changes, heading into the next season. So yeah, if Jabari Parker can put up sort of top 60, top 70 value, I think you'll be able to get him probably around 7, round 8, round 9 at this stage, if we can keep a little bit of hype off of him. But also particularly if you don't get one of those strong scorers early. I know, Josh, you talk a lot about picking up guys who can score in particular, and then later on that scoring drops off. But so if you do miss out on one of those elite scorers, then Jabari Parker's a pretty good option later in the draft.
There's a real chance it's probably less than 50% chance, but there's a real chance he approaches 18, 19 points a game this season. That's what he's going to be. He's going to be a scorer. He's going to be comfortable for the entire season. There's no one there to take his minutes. Thon Maker's not taking his minutes. We know what the Bucks think of Greg Monroe. He's not taking the minutes. We'll see what happens in free agency, but Jabari is their power forward of the future, and he could be a 20-point scorer in this league. And as you alluded to, Matt, it's impossible to find points. You can get Wiggins late, but you won't be able to get him late because he gets overdrafted 3 or 4 rounds pretty much every season. DeMar DeRozan is that guy, but I don't know if you'll be able to get him. You could get him at probably a 10-20 spot bargain last season. You probably won't be able to get that. And then you can't find scoring. You can't find 20 points a game. And he won't probably be a 20-point guy, but there's a chance that he could approach that and really be a positive in that scoring category. Because if you don't get points early, you're in a real lot of trouble because you literally just cannot find points or big scoring players later in the draft. And when you can find someone who's got that ability, it can be pretty key. Now, Hood and Parker, I think a lot of people know about those guys, and you might expect them to have maybe a 20-30 spot jump. The next guy I think has got a real chance to have a monumental jump, and that is Lord Alfred Payton of the Orlando Magic. He finished outside the top 120 last season, but we know the situation in... Actually, you know what? I was going to say we know the situation in Orlando, but we don't, because do you know what they're doing? Trading the Oladipo trade for Ibaka, and now trading a second rounder for Jody Meeks, who has played about 10 combined games in the last two seasons and is old. And yes, he's on a cheapish contract, but I'm not really sure what benefit bringing Jody Meeks across does for this team. But one thing is sure, Scott Skiles is gone, and he's gone in part because he didn't want to play Alfred Payton, and the team wants to play Alfred Payton. So Alfred Payton, we saw in his rookie season, we saw in stretches this season, he's got top 50 potential, and I think that he is going to be a player that is set for a pretty big bump this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Payton averaged 11 points, 3.6 rebounds, 6.4 assists, and 1.2 steals last season, which probably wasn't quite what I was expecting. I was expecting more. But in 10 games without Oladipo, that increased to 14 points, 4 rebounds, 7.6 assists, and 1.4 steals. So I know it's a small sample size, but having the ball in Payton's hands a lot more is only going to benefit him. And as you said, with Scott Skiles no longer there in Orlando, it's going to bode really well for Payton's fantasy value. And now he's got Serge Ibaka protecting the rim behind him.
Yeah, he's a really good perimeter defender. He can be a guy that gets you 1.6 steals. He actually got half a three a game, which is more than really you'd expect from him, and hit them at 33%, which again, he's just not a good shooter. But when you're getting half a three at 33%, it's not bad. The free throws are poor, but they don't necessitate a punt. There's something you really have to pay attention to with a Z score of -1, which is, if you've got a Z score of over -2 in something, you're pretty much punting. If you're a -4, there's no chance of recovering. But a -1, it requires massaging of your team, but it's not impossible. If you've got some other, three other 80% shooters, you can absorb an Alfred Payton in that sort of percentage. And we saw his field goal percentage up at 44. I think in college, if I'm not mistaken, he shot about 50% from the field. And I use the term shot loosely because they weren't shots. They were, let's get to the rim and lay it in. And he's got to be able to pick his spots. And we talk about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist being one of the worst shooters in the NBA. But he shoots like 48% every year because he takes the shots that he knows he can hit. And he doesn't attempt shots that he can't hit. And the threat of that in terms of real life play is something different versus fantasy, where if you're just taking shots you know you can hit and you can get himself, if he shot 46% from the field, I wouldn't be stunned despite the fact that he can't shoot. It's about shot selection and having the ball in his hands. Well, he still averaged 6.5 assists a game in under 30 minutes. So you think he's going to get... Look, Frank Vogel hasn't been shy with playing his starters big minutes either, and there is not even a decent backup point guard on this team. So he's going to have to play big minutes, and he feels like, especially if you can deal with that free throw percentage, almost a lock for a top 50 role. Who are we going to... Next, this is an interesting one, Matt. You put this guy on the list. We're going to head up to Toronto. Damari Carroll. He finished the season ranked 128th, and it is completely fair to say that he was an abject disappointment during the season. There was injuries. Big, big knee injuries that cost him a lot of time. But I will say I don't believe that it was all knee injury related. Is that fair of me to say that?
What are you insinuating?
I'm insinuating that he was crap, that he was his play was inflated by playing A with the Hawks coaching staff, B with the Hawks players, and C in the Hawks system, as we've seen with Kent Bazemore, who, let's be honest, was crap until he got to Atlanta. Tamari Carroll, also crap until he got to Atlanta, and now we've seen one season away from Atlanta, still terrible. Maybe terrible is the wrong word, but he averaged 11 points, 1.8 triples, 4.7 rebounds, 1.7 steals, but shot 39 from the field, 60 from the line, and he did shoot 39 from three. I don't know what to make of Damari Carroll. You've written here bounce back candidate. I'm not as convinced with him, but I don't need to be convinced because I don't need to pick him in the top 50. And he was a guy that, especially in nine category leagues, was always pushing that top 60 mark in those two seasons in Atlanta. So do you see it more as a factor of injury, or I think you must see it as more of an injury issue?
I see it as a little bit of both, mainly that injury, but also then just having that another season and another training camp and off season in Toronto.
That's fair enough.
It was always going to be hard for him moving from that awesome system in Atlanta to Toronto next to DeRozan and Lowry, who are taking, you know, anywhere up to 40 shots per game. He was never going to have that season, but his injury, as you said, was massive. He only played the 26 games, but then his efficiency was just terrible. Dropped from 48% to 38% from the field and 70% to 60% from the free throw line. So if they can come back up to around that Atlanta, that he's at Atlanta Hawk base, and he's a great guy sort of in the last few spots of your round who can get those combo of rebounds, steals and threes, a poor man's Trevor Ariza, if you like. And I love these wing guys who can, you know, grab you 5-6 rebounds and throw in a steal and a block, and we'll talk about at least one more, if not two more, of these guys further on in the podcast going down the list. But yeah, I just wanted to put Damari Carroll there just because I think he'll be under the radar because these guys and Carroll burned fantasy owners last season, so they'll be less likely to pick him. So I think he might just fall down a couple of rounds on draft day. And yeah, if you take him in your last three or four spots and it doesn't work out, then so be it. Drop him. Free agent. Away you go.
Absolutely. Now, what he did in November, which was before the knee injuries took hold, he played 35 minutes a game. So he's playing a lot. He averaged 12.5, 4.5, and 1.2. And that's not spectacular, but it is sort of in line with what he did for the season. The points are a little bit higher, but he still shot 39% from the field. So the poor shooting is more of a system issue rather than an injury issue. And it could be, as you mentioned, just a familiarity problem that he needs more time with these guys and playing with a different bunch of players. But he still shot 65% from the line in that time frame as well. He was still a 0.9 plus minus, so not a great number there. And that was in 35 minutes. But he did approach two triples a game, and he did approach two steals a game, which is obviously a pretty impressive numbers. But still, it wasn't all knee injury. It did play a part, but coupling a knee injury with moving to a new location with new teammates in a completely different system, it compounded for him to be a real disappointment. And you're right, people do get scared off, and it is something when we're looking at these guys that you can, you know, take advantage of people being, you know, I'm never drafting that guy again, which is just a phrase I'll never say, because what if the opportunity presents itself at a great value. You have to take that. And he could be that guy that is sitting at 110 or 120. And you go, thanks, I'll take Damari Carroll and let's see how it works out, because we've seen him do it before. And maybe there's a 50% chance that those factors that got him there aren't there anymore, but there's still a 50% chance that they are. So it is an option. But I was not happy with him before he got injured, and then that just put the complete kibosh on things. He's 29 years old. He's almost 29 and a half. So let's see how he starts to age, because it's not like he's an elite prospect. Now, elite prospects have their prime extended. Players who are marginal players, you know, 27 to 29 is their prime, and he just missed one whole year of that with a knee problem. How's his recovery? How's the decline going to start to be? So he's an interesting target, but he definitely should be mentioned on this list. The next player is a guy that I went into with a fair bit of detail in the rookie review podcast, Matt. So I'll let you handle the majority of Miles Turner here. But I'll start by saying that, yes, he was 134th last year. There is no chance that you get him outside the top 100 this season to me. He is the starting centre. Mihinmi won't be back. Thad Young is the starting power forward, so we know that Turner won't be playing as the four. There's 29 to 30 minutes in his future, and his game is just supremely fantasy friendly, so I couldn't be more on board with this pick if I tried.
Yeah, Miles Turner's going to be absolutely hyped up going into the season, so probably going to have to go pretty early to get him, but he played exactly 30 games as a starter and exactly 30 games off the bench last season. He averaged exactly 10 more minutes per game as a starter, where he averaged 11.5 points, 6.7 rebounds and 1.6 blocks. Really solid free throw shooting for a shot blocking big man. Yes, Indiana starting to put a few pieces around him now with Thad Young, Jeff T coming in there, throwing another season of Paul George, and yeah, Miles Turner's gonna be in for a big fantasy season and highly sought after in dynasty leagues in particular.
He only shot 21% from three last season. That will improve. He can be a Serge Ibaka-ish type shot blocker, three-point shooter, which that combination is not common, but he can, you know, Ibaka's been sort of the standard bearer for that sort of a stat combination over the last 2 to 3 seasons, and Turner can approach that as well as being an above 80% free throw shooter as well, which is something, again, it's rare for guys that big. Rebound scoring, he's got it all. There is no reason why he won't be a top. There's reasons why he won't be. Things could go wrong, but you should be approaching the season thinking that Miles Turner is in that top 50 mix, and I can't see a valid reason why he wouldn't be at this early point. Julius Randle, 138th last season. It was technically his rookie season. No, sorry, it wasn't. It was technically not his rookie season. But as long as you're not counting the 7 minutes he played in the year before, it basically was. I have been on record saying I'm not the biggest Julius Randle fan. It remains the case. I think he's a really good rebounder, but I don't think he does anything else above average, and I'm not really sure he projects to do anything else above average. To me, he's a player that, based on the team he plays for, gets overhyped. Now, we'll see what they do this coming season with Randle, but it's a fair bet to think that he increases his production. It's his second season, so not many players get worse, unless your name's Landry Fields, going from your first to your second season. What do you see from Randle? Where can he take his game? For a start, I think his minutes were going to go up from 28 a game.
Yeah, it was more probably a case of, I think, the Lakers are going to, obviously, they're going to improve. They can't get much worse, particularly with new coach Luke Walton there. So I'm really excited just to see what Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell can do in terms of a basketball point of view. In terms of fantasy, he's limited due to his lack of defensive stats. And he also needs to increase his efficiency. So there's a few things there that he needs to work on. But if you're looking for a pure double-double machine, once again, outside the top 100, then Julius Randle's a probably one of the best options.
Yeah, the average double-digit rebounds in just those 28 minutes. He was a victim of the Byron Scott school of miscoaching. Not quite as big as D'Angelo Russell, but he still suffered the wrath there, was benched for a big stretch of the season. But I don't think that his defensive stats are ever really going to come around. He's never going to be a huge scorer, and I don't think he's ever going to be an efficient player. Now, people heading into their second season, again, your percentages will rise. He won't shoot 43 from the field. He might be a 45 guy. He won't shoot 28 from, maybe he will shoot 28 from three, because that's not really his game. And his free throws are subpar. 72 is not bad, but he needs to get better in those areas, especially when you don't do anything. Like, Zach Randolph does nothing apart from points and rebounds, but he used to be a 52% field goal guy and like a 75 free throw. Randle, to get to those numbers, he's got a lot of work to do. And he's got a score. Randolph was 20 and 10. I'm not sure if Julius Randle ever gets to 20 and 10 to be that guy. And even when Zebo was a 20 and 10 guy, he struggled to push the top 50. And I think that's probably Randle's ceiling. I don't view him as a foundational piece on a great team. He's not the second best player on a championship team. He's probably not the third best player on a championship team. I just think he's quite limited in what he can do, and he can be a decent starter for 10 years, but probably as a fourth starter. So, yes, he will get better. There is no doubt he'll be better next season because of the coaching, because of his experience, because of not Byron Scott. And I know I mentioned coaching twice. That's how bad it was. he has got a real opportunity to jump up and prove me and others wrong with what he can do with his game. He is interesting in terms of he's got some ability to play make a little bit, and that's something. If that starts to develop and he gets a 3 assists a game, then we're talking another 10 or 20 spot jump. The pencil, Matt. Do you know who the pencil is?
Pencil is HB, Harrison Barnes.
It absolutely is. The pencil. He was the 145th player last season. There is lots of, you know, we hear Kevin Durant rumors every day. Probably we get the second most reporting on the pencil as to what, where he might be going, what offers are out there. We hear that the Sixers are looking to throw a max at the pencil. If he goes back to the Warriors, it's more of the same. If he goes to the Sixers, where does he go from there?
Well, that's exactly what I've put in brackets here. On the right team, not necessarily saying that he's on the wrong team with the Warriors, but it's just that he's the fourth or fifth option on offense. And it's probably even more so about how much crap he's copped this season, particularly in social media and that public perception around Harrison Barnes. So he could even be a guy who goes undrafted because there is that perception of how bad he is. But at the end of the day, we don't care if players are good or bad. It's what numbers they're putting up. So on a new team, potentially with an increased role, you could see around 1.5 threes and perhaps a steal a game. And like I was talking about with Damari Carroll, if he can get 5 or 6 rebounds, and over a steal and three a game, and just one of those glue guys who you can grab in the last spots, they're pretty valuable players. So yeah, I'm really interested to see where he's going to land over the next couple of weeks, and that will have a massive bearing on his fantasy value.
Don't write this down, but there is a chance that on a different team he could be 15-6 with 1.5 threes, a steal, and then this is his percentages from last season, 47-76-38. Like, they're really good percentages, like really, really good. And you translate that into more usage and probably 2 or 3 more minutes per game. There's no doubt he's a top 100 player, and there's no doubt that he's a top 75 player in that situation. But it is all about location. If you're feeling ballsy and you think the Warriors won't match, trade for him. And you might be able to get almost, not double your return, but you should be able to get yourself a top 70 player. He's shown at times when the Warriors weren't as good that he was able to produce and be quite a decent player. He's faded into the background a bit, and that's fair enough when you've got other like transcendent type stars on your team. He's clearly the fourth option and was horrible. And public perception, Matt, you said is absolutely correct. The amount of hatred that flew for Harrison Barnes on Twitter and in forums and articles was astronomical. So even if he goes to another team, you're going to be just bombarded with articles. Is the pencil the worst max player ever? Why would my team spend $20 million on a pencil? Like, this sort of stuff would come out there. And they'll end up being wrong, but it will end up in your advantage if you go, well, that's fine. I'll take him at pick 90, and I should be able to reap 2-3 rounds of value off that. He's a good player. He's not a bad player. He was really poor in the finals, agreed, but he's not a bad player. He is an above-average player who could thrive into a below-all-star level good-ish type player, and that's damning with faint praise, but I think it feels fairly accurate. And he missed a big chunk of this season with a really severe ankle injury. And if you go back into the annals of NBA injury history, if you suffer a really big ankle injury, you are basically shit for the rest of the year, because you no doubt come back too early, because that's what sportsmen do. They come back too early, and then you're just constantly playing on that ankle, and you're not right. We saw before Jim Butler's big breakout, he suffered a huge ankle sprain and was garbage for most of the season. Came back, top 20. That's not going to be the pencil. He's probably not going to be a top 20 guy. But people playing on severe ankle sprains, they're not right. And you're running and jumping and moving and pivoting and switching and all that stuff, you're not right. And that's a big factor with the pencil here as well. So I think that he is a great pick here. And in the top 100 on a different team, it feels like a lock to me.
And he's just turned 24 as well, so he's coming into his prime.
He's bloody
so,
young.
Yep. Yeah, particularly in a dynasty leg, now's the time to jump on. And the next guy we're going to talk about, he's only 23 years old.
Yes.
That's incredible that this guy is 23 and he's going to have a big season and he's going to have even more hype around him.
Yeah, now we talk about the anti-hype of Harrison Barnes. What about Steve Adams, who, let's be honest, was universally praised for his play in the playoffs. He's universally loved for his attitude in press conferences. There is as much positivity about Steve Adams at the moment as there is pretty much any player in the NBA, and it's without doubt going to translate into fantasy. He was just inside the top 150 next season, and you would feel without Serge Ibaka there. And one of the reasons, there was multitudes of reasons why the Thunder got rid of Ibaka, apparently locker room unrest, the impending free agency, but also their ability to think, nah, Steve's got this, and let's get an asset for Serge while Steve develops. They think that Adams can take on a bigger role, and that's going to translate pretty well. And we had a debate about Adams's top 100 fantasy candidacy before the Serge Ibaka trade. How do you feel about it now?
Yeah, well, you threw out the question, do you draft Steven Adams inside the top 100? And I said it was pretty borderline, but I probably would have. Now with the playoffs and the trade, and as you said, the way OKC are going to lean so heavily on him in that front court. Yes, definitely a top 100 player. But now we've got to be careful that we don't go and overdraft him, that we reach for him in pick 76 and he doesn't return top 80 value. So he's going to be one that you're going to have to get spot on draft day. But yeah, his playing time could increase to 30 minutes. He could be up around 10, 12 points, 8, 9 rebounds, 1.5 blocks. Excellent field goal percentage, albeit on limited attempts. Doesn't take enough free throws to hurt us right at this moment anyway, in the past couple of seasons, with increased minutes, more likely increased free throw attempts. But yeah, another guy, like I said, with Miles Turner, who's going to be hyped up. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Steven Adams can do. And once again, Dynasty Leagues, 23 years old, another 7-8 seasons. He's got a lot of value.
The free throw thing is important. You mentioned he shot 58% on 2.5 attempts in 25 minutes, but that will go up. He plays 30 minutes. You're looking at him going up to being maybe 3 attempts per game. Now, I've got the Z scores in front of me for free throw percentage. I'm not sure if you do, Matt. Who has the bigger negative free throw percentage impact, him or Lord Alfred Payton? Is from last season.
I don't have it in front of me, so this is a complete guesstimation. I'm going to say Payton.
Yeah, Payton was a negative 1.00 and Adams was a negative 0.98. So you can say, I don't want Payton, I don't want his free throws. Adams is basically the exact same impact on your free throw percentage. And You it was close, but you went Payton. I reckon if I put a poll out there before I had done this on Twitter, I reckon I would have got 80% of people saying Payton's is worse and more impactful. But in essence, and especially Adams gets the extra 5-6 minutes, and Payton might get an extra 2-3 minutes, but Adams gets an extra 5-6 minutes, he might actually end up being the more negatively impactful free throw percentage guy, and it sort of goes against what you might have in your head as the initial impression. So it is something to pay attention to. But yeah, I can't see a way that A, that he's drafted outside the top 100, or B, that he finishes outside the top 100. Last season in Ninecat Leagues post-All-Star, he was 102nd, so he was almost top 100 in that time frame anyway, and we know he's going to get a bigger role at this early stage. The next guy on the list, Matt, is a player that I spoke about fairly extensively in the Fourth Year Breakout podcast, and we talk about boyfriends. We go back to one of mine here, and Kelly Olynyk, who finished the season dead even at 150 last year. I am a huge proponent of Kelly Olynyk. He finished 150th. He played 20 minutes a game. If he could get 30 minutes a game, how high does he go?
You'd have to give me some projected stats, but he would be between 45 and 60.
Yeah,
off the top of my head,
I think on the podcast the other day I said that if he gets to a 30 minute plus role, he's a top 50 player, and I don't know. And this is something that Brad Stevens has done great stuff in Boston. We know that. A lot of people do go a little bit overboard with the Brad Stevens love. But one thing he's never been able to do is get a consistent front court. and get people consistent in their role and get consistent rotations and consistent playing time for people. It'll be Salinger, it'll be Johnson, it'll be Lee, it'll be Zeller, it'll be Olynyk, it'll be whoever else they ran out there last season. Olynyk is by far and away the best player in that front court rotation. He's the most versatile. He's one of the most versatile and difficult to defend offensive centers in the entire NBA. He was the Celtics' best three-point shooter. He hit 41% of his threes, 1.2 triples in those 20 minutes, 4 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.5 blocks. He's a triple one threat in starters' minutes. The percentages are good for him. He's got everything that you look for in a fantasy game, but do we have any indication that Brad Stevens will decide we're just going to run two starters and play them 28 to 30 minutes?
No, we don't. We've got no idea who's going to be in that front court exactly. Either. Do they sign Al Horford? Do they go and trade for Nerlens Noel? Do they do something else? Do they stick with the guys they've got under contract? We just don't know. So he's going to be one that we really are going to have to wait for the next 2 weeks. But if you do feel like a gamble, maybe go and throw out an offer to the Kelly Olynyk owner now and see what the other guy wants in return.
And he is heading into his fourth season. He's had foul trouble throughout his career, but it's gotten better each season, and that's exactly what you expect from younger players, to be really foul prone early on and to improve, and he's improved all his percentages. All he's got to do now is A, be healthy, and he's had some shoulder problems. He's got to be healthy, and he's got to be able to get a consistent role. And I think with Salinger and Zeller perhaps not there, and Ante Zizic maybe not coming across, although he's still a fair chance to me of coming across, that Olynyk might find himself, and we can only hope, that Brad Stevens goes, you're the center, mate. Let's have 28 minutes, and let's see you then become a pretty comfortable top 80 guy in 28 minutes, potentially, yeah, bordering on top 70 sort of player. There's a lot to like about Olynyk, and I'm glad you're in agreement with him, because he's look, top three shit haircuts in the NBA, but one of my favorite players, no doubt.
And just quickly, last season in 20 minutes, 0.5 of a block, 0.8 of a steal, and 1.23. So, yeah, 28, 30 minutes. It easily could become a triple one guy. Hang on, we've got a tweet here live from Dean Vasich. Per 36 minutes stats, nearly 18 points per game, one block, 1.3 steals, 2.7 assists, and 7.3 rebounds. Yeah. How are those for numbers?
Yeah, they're fantastic. He's not going to get 36, but they're really, really good numbers. And I want to have a look at what his per 36 ranking was last season, if I can bring that up. Yeah, he was ranked 55th in Ninecat per 36 rankings last season. Shows how, you know, how good he is in those limited minutes, and how much he's able to produce in such a short time frame. I did speak about him quite a bit on that fourth year breakout podcast. The next player, we talked about people letting down their fantasy owners, and Damari Carroll being one of those. Was there a bigger letdown artist than Danny Green in San Antonio, Matt? He finished outside the top 150, and he looked like someone who'd forgotten how to play basketball, especially offensively. What do we do with him? You are not going to have to take Danny Green inside the top 100, because the hatred for Danny Green was immense. But there's every chance that if that shot falls, it's all back on for him.
Yeah, and I got burnt big time by Danny Green last season. Drafted him in a lot of leagues around that 50-60 mark. He went from the 41st player in 8-cat leagues in 14-15 to 154, so dropped over 100 drop. Spots.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous drop.
And there was no, like, major reason behind it. Same team, same coach, same system. Sure, they brought in
Marcus
Aldridge. But that you just could not see that coming. So once again, this talk, will the Spurs trade Danny Green to open up money to get another couple of players in? So we will sort of have to wait and see where he lands. But yeah, once again, surely he can't be worse than last season. And like you said, he's burnt owners. So people be like, oh, I'm not having Danny Green again. He was shit last season. I'm not putting up with another season of him. So if you can get him at pick 90, pick 110, I think that'll be pretty good, depending on where he lands.
He was a top 25 Ninecat guy last season, and I'm not a big Ninecat rank guy, but that's ridiculous. And yeah, top 50 comfortably in 8-cat that season as well. And quietly, Matt, he was almost a triple one player this year. 1.5 threes, a steal, 0.8 blocks, and 0.8 blocks out of a shooting guard is ridiculous in only 26 minutes as well, because he shot 38% from the field. He shot 33 from three, which is drops of like 7-8% from what he was last season. He literally just forgot how to shoot, and he looked a little bit better in the playoffs. His defense was still at a tremendously high level, but the fact that he was just such a negative offensively meant Pop couldn't play him as much. But if that shot starts falling again, then forget about it. Then everything comes back. The defensive numbers come back because he stays on the court more. He plays an extra 4 minutes a night, and he gets you 1.5 steals, 1.2 blocks, 1.8 threes, and hits them at a good percentage. And yeah, everyone's going to be way off Danny Green. You take him in your last couple of picks, but we've seen it. He hasn't forgotten. Well, maybe he has, because he looked like he'd forgotten how to play, but I can't think that a guy just all of a sudden goes, well, that's it, I don't know how to shoot anymore. There was something weird going on. At some point, we'll probably find out that, you know, his house burnt down or some bullshit thing that not that that's a bullshit thing, but something happened in his private life that just messed with everything, with his concentration, with his preparation. Maybe he had a kid. Maybe he broke up with his missus. I don't know what happened, but anything could have happened, because there was clearly, you don't just drop 8% on your shooting percentages out of nowhere. There has got to have been, and if there's not something that happened, it is just one of the most bizarre drop-offs in NBA history. And everyone got burnt on it, and yeah, I expect a big bounce back.
And you talk about Danny Green dropping 100 spots from last season, this guy might jump up 100 spots.
Your segue work is on point, Matt. It is Dennis Schroeder of the Atlanta Hawks, who finished 154th last season. He is the starting point guard in Atlanta, for better or for worse. His on-court play is sometimes questionable, but he also has the ability to just, you know, turn it on. And on a team filled with, you know, other good players, Millsap and Horford and Korver at times, he's got the ability to be the best player on the court for maybe a 2 or 3 minute stretch where he just goes red hot. He's super fast. He can hit threes in bunches. Sometimes he's not reliable with his shot, but he's going to get every opportunity, and that opportunity is going to turn into top 50 fantasy production. Now, it's really hard to judge at this point, and people always ask me, where do I draft him? Is it value? Who's the guy you're targeting? And my answer is no one, because I need to know where everyone else is targeting these players. Like, if he comes out with an ADP of 45, I'll probably go, you know what? Yeah, he might get to 45, but there's also a chance he doesn't. He comes out with an ADP of 80, then he's on every one of my teams. It really depends on what the general consensus is on him, because if everyone's picking him in the top 50, then what's the point? Because he's still got a risk of actually being bad. Not necessarily being bad, of being not that good. But taking him at 80, there's zero chance he doesn't finish in the top 80, I think.
If you were drafting tonight, where would you feel comfortable drafting him?
Yeah, in the top 70, no doubt. Probably top 60. Top 50.
Top 60?
Yeah, top 50, maybe a stretch, but it depends on how I'd round it out the rest of my team. But there's no reason he can't get a seven assist type season.
Yep. Yeah, well, it's per my segue there, Josh. Per 36 numbers, 17.4 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.3 steals, 1.3 threes. Now that's going to come with poor field goal percentage in his turnovers.
Turnover,
I think he
bad.
Could put up similar numbers to Reggie Jackson in his first full season in Detroit, which was 18 points. I don't think Detroit will be quite at 18 points, but 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.5 threes. The only concern I do have right now is if Horford leaves and the Hawks trade Millsap, who will he have to pass to? And he might have to take on extra shots. But I was also thinking today about, in terms of positional tiers and rankings, how we would go with the point guards. He's not a top 10 fantasy point guard at the moment, because we've got Curry, Westbrook, CP3, John Wall, Lillard, Lowry, Kyrie Irving, Walker, Isaiah Thomas, and I've got Rubio in there. But now I've got Schroeder ahead of guys like Jeff Teague and Mike Conley. Do you agree?
Absolutely ahead of Conley at this point. And yes, I'd have to say he's ahead of Teague as well. It's real early and I haven't looked at this exactly. But yes, I was just about to actually ask you, would you have him ahead of Teague? And yes, I would. Teague looked broken at times last season, and he came out with that, yeah, I've had a torn patella or whatever he had. But maybe that's the case. But yeah, I would have Schroeder ahead of Teague at this point. And there's a chance that in a fantasy draft you could get Teague and then two rounds later you could get Schroeder and still get a better response out of Schroeder. It all depends on how the general populace sees these guys, and then because so much of drafting is influenced by people's rank on ESPN or Yahoo, which again a lot of the time is wildly inaccurate, and their ADP. And that's how you should be basing your draft, is on that sort of stuff. But he is legit got top 50 upside here. I'll let you handle this next one, because I did talk about him on the rookie review show, and he is one of your boys, and that is Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns. We saw almost universal praise for what Booker did last season. It didn't translate into great fantasy numbers. I think that's probably the fairest way of saying it. He finished outside the top 150 for the season. Post All-Star break, Matt, he was 105th. So it's not bad. But I think with the way that he was spoken about, that a lot of people would have, you know, had a guess that he was a top 75 player post All-Star break, given the level of hype that he had. He was 182nd in NICAT post All-Star, so that's not a great number. And with the return of Eric Bledsoe, the minute squeeze might be real there. Now, there's lots of talk about a trade, and you would have to think that some sort of trade gets done in the backcourt at some point this season. But is Booker a player who is at risk of being overdrafted this season?
I think he is. And you just spoke about his post-All-Star stats there, and one of the reasons why that ranking was so low, he went from 45% pre-All-Star to 40% post-All-Star on 17 field goal attempts. That's a massive number. And I think I mentioned this on one of our previous podcasts. It might have been a Suns review.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking about Devin Booker's value moving forward, that he's going to have to do something else apart from be a scorer and a three-pointer. We're going to need to see 4 or 5 assists somehow. We're going to need to see 1 to 1.5 steals somehow. Maybe it's 4 or 5 rebounds. So the points and the threes alone just aren't going to cut it, because we can go and get Isaiah Cannon off the waiver wire who can do exactly that. So as you said, this backcourt still needs to play out, but we know, well, it should be the guy there that the Suns are building around, along with Dragon Bender, Marquise Chris, hopefully Alex Len as well. So we'll see what the Suns can do over the next couple of weeks in free agency. Maybe they do trade Knight or Bledsoe now. Tyson Chandler's the other one who you would have to think is on the trading block. But in terms of Booker's fantasy value, yeah, once again, he's another guy who people are going to have to be careful about going too early on. I think I said about a month ago that I probably would take him inside the 100 or around about, but I don't think I'd be comfortable right now taking him sort of inside the top 85.
He averaged post All-Star. I talked about those rankings where he was ranked 182nd in NICAT leagues and 100th in 8CAT. He averaged 19 points in those games. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. 3 rebounds and 4 assists. But the 35 minutes he played, it's going to be tough to achieve with Knight and Bledsoe there. The 4 assists he achieved, it's almost impossible for him to achieve that with Knight and Bledsoe both there. I can't see how he does it. Yes, his field goal percentage will jump from 40 maybe to 43, 44. Maybe he gets it back to 45. But his usage will drop. He was at 20% usage pre-All-Star, 26 post. He's not going to be using 26% of the Suns' possessions with Knight and Bledsoe around. So you're going to get differences in what he did. He shot 29% from 3 post-All-Star, 40 pre. It's a balance. His percentages and efficiency will rise. His usage will drop. His assists will drop. And his overall scoring will likely drop as well. And then if a trade goes down, all bets are off. And he is a guy that, you know, is probably in the next 3 seasons should be pushing into top 50 territory. But for next season, it's a little bit of a risk. And he does have that big sort of flashing red light to me of a, you know, big overdraft warning on him, where you could come into drafts and see him with an ADP of 50 or 60. And it wouldn't surprise me if he was there. And I wouldn't want anything to do with it at that point. Another rookie who I am super interested in, and that is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. He barely played his rookie season, so he hasn't had the full rookie growing pain experience. But this team, the Brooklyn Nets, is a destitute wasteland at the moment. They've got him, they've got Caris LeVert as their 2 young players to build around. The 2 and the 3, LeVert probably won't get starters minutes this year, but Hollis Jefferson will. I don't think there's any reason why he won't be the starter and play 30 minutes. And just develops just a tinge of offensive ability, then we're going to see a tremendous amount of value from him. Steals will be through the roof, big rebounding numbers, can block shots. I think his efficiency is better than what people remember. He shot 46% as a rookie and only 29 on threes. That can improve. But in his 21 minutes, 5 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 0.6 blocks. He could be a 6.5 rebound guy, 1.6 steals, a 0.8 block sort of guy, and just get you 10 or 11 points. And then he really does have a chance of challenging for that top 100 spot, because who else is doing it on this team aside from Brook Lopez?
You've said everything I wanted to say. Yeah, massive defensive guy. I agree with those 1.6 to 1.8 type steals. And I was just looking at the Brooklyn Nets sort of roster before, and now that Thad Young is out the way, there could be another guy if they don't make some moves in the front court, and that's Thomas Robinson, if he happens to start at power forward. Talking about big rebound guys, he could come into fantasy calculations as well.
They've got to sign him though. He's an unrestricted free agent. Yeah, no, he declined his player option. He's a free agent, so who knows where he goes. Now, he gets a lot of rebounds. He also gives you no blocks. He also is a horrific free throw percentage and on a lot of attempts as well, and does nothing else apart from rebound. But you're right, he can go out there and grab you a stack of rebounds, but beware the hit you take in free throws. Beware just the fact that this guy barely blocks a shot at all, and his defense is lamentable. The guy I'd be looking at power forward is Chris McCullough. He's the guy I'm really interested in, coming off an ACL injury. He's a guy they should be looking to build around. They got him at a real discount in last year's draft at pick 28 because he had that ACL injury and looked relatively impressive in his playing time. I'm not thinking that he's going to be standard league relevant, but it's a real opportunity for him to be a player who they get a lot of developmental minutes into and becomes a real surprise packet this season. Another rookie. Again, I spoke about these rookies pretty extensively, so I'll let you take the reins with Emmanuel Mudiay, who by advanced metrics was the worst rookie in the entire NBA last season, and was really unplayable for the first 2 to 3 months in fantasy and real life. He still played, but he was atrocious. But yeah, when he suffered that ankle injury, Matt, light bulb started to go off and he looked a different player. What do you envisage for him next season? Is he that guy that could he challenge for a top 50 spot next season?
Probably not quite. I'd be a lot more comfortable if you said sort of 60 to 80. But yeah, once again, post All-Star, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 1.5 threes, not quite a steal a game, but his efficiency in particular went from 34% to nearly 40%. Which 40% is still not great, but it's a lot better than 34, obviously. And 61 from the free throw line to 77. So if he can keep increasing that efficiency, we know as a general rule, rookies are pretty poor from the field and sometimes the free throw line as well. That'll be Ben Simmons' downfall this coming season. But yeah, Emmanuel Mudiay, once again, particularly in a dynasty league, if you know, people weren't thrilled with his first season production. I think I actually picked him for Rookie of the Year just because he was going to get so many minutes there in Denver, but didn't quite work out. So, once again, I'd probably spend a late 10, round 11 pick on him.
Now, Matt,
if you said he was the worst rookie, then he obviously can't get much worse. Only one way up from there, mate.
You're staunchly anti-punting, and Mudiay has some big, big negatives. He is not someone you should have owned at all in rotisserie leagues last season. I mentioned before, if you're a negative 2 in a Z score category, that necessitates a punt. He was a negative 2.5 in his field goal percentage. Obviously, that's really poor. It did improve quite a bit in the second half of the season. Is he someone that you would feel comfortable about given your anti-punt strategy?
In a roto league, no. In a head-to-head league, more likely, just because I'd be looking after my percentages through the draft, so then I could probably afford to take one guy, whether it be like a Ricky Rubio in round 5 or 6 or a Mudiay in round 9, 10, 11, who just to boost up my counting stats a bit more, and yeah, maybe take a couple of percent hit in a field goal percentage category or the free throw percentage category. And I just want you to remind people, you said about a positive 2 or a negative 2 in standard deviation is elite. Can you just remind people what a Hassan Whiteside was in blocks.
Yep, give me a second, I'll find it. I think it was 4 point something.
Yes.
5.2.
How's that?
It's unbeatable. It is ridiculously good. I think Steph Curry was 4.3 in three-pointers. So Whiteside's block impact was bigger than Steph Curry's three-point percentage impact. Now, if you're playing, yep. Not 3 point percentage, 3 pointers. If you're playing 3 point percentage, Steph Curry's value there was 6.6. So that's just, it's out of control good. You could play, if Steph Curry's 3 point percentage was his free throw percentage, you could play him along with Andre Drummond and still win free throw percentage. That's how impactful he was. Now, you can't do that with anybody with free throw percentage because nobody can recover Drummond, but that's how big those numbers were. But Whiteside's, yeah, tremendous numbers there. But Moutier is an interesting guy, and he did improve those percentages, and his free throws is not something that is punt worthy. You can definitely deal with that. The field goal percentage is what's the concern, but that should improve. That should get to 42-43. They added a lot of shooters, Jamal Murray, Malik Beasley. If Juan Hernan Gomez comes across, which we're not sure about yet, is another shooter on this team that will ease things for Moutier and enable him to increase his field goal percentage, along with natural growth and progression as well. The next player, we talk about guys who really have got that red light of the overdraft warning. And I think this guy is almost the thumbnail pitcher for that group. Bismack Biyombo had a tremendous playoff series. He also had a playoff series where he was given a role as the man in Toronto because of the injury to Jonas Valanciunas, and he grabbed a lot of rebounds. He contested shots, but Matt, I ask you this question, what else did he do?
He rebounded, he blocked shots, and his field goal percentage was okay.
Yep, so he was, and on about 2 attempts per game as well. That's a slight exaggeration, but you can shoot 60%, which he didn't, but you can shoot 60% if you're taking 3 shots a game. It's like pissing into the ocean. It just has no impact. And that's the concern with Biyombo. He's going to get a big contract. He's really good defensively. But you'll also remember that when Valanciunas came back, he went back and played 18 minutes. So his play was not that great, where they said, Jonas, even though you're coming back from a severe ankle injury, you're going to remain on the bench because Biyombo's been that good. Valanciunas was healthy. He came back and they just said, okay, Bismack, you go play your 16 minutes again. And that's the concern, is that he's going to go to a bad team. He's not going back to Toronto. I can guarantee you that. He's going to go to another team. And he's probably going to be paid as a starter, and he's going to start, and he's going to get overdrafted, and he's going to get a lot of rebounds, and he's going to block shots, but he's also going to do nothing in the other areas, like literally nothing. And if you're taking a player, and you might need to take him in the 60s, that gives you a positive contribution in 2 categories, maybe a marginal in a third, it's not enough for me. How do you see it? Do you think that he's got massive overdraft potential?
Yeah, he does, and I put him on this list because he was ranked 180th last season. Being a free agent, new team, potentially somewhere like Dallas, he's just going to feast on the boards and blocks. But like you said, doesn't do anywhere near enough in those other categories. So, yeah, if you've stocked up on points and assists and steals, and you're at the back end of the draft and you need a big man and to boost up your boards and blocks, then Biyombo's your bloke. But Biyombo's your bloke, our international friends be like, what's a bloke? That's just a man. It's our Australian slang for a man. Let's see where he lands before we delve too much into his fantasy value.
Also a poor free throw shooter as well. His per 36 stats, Matt, per 36 minutes, 9 points. Now, he's not playing 36 minutes where he goes because he's that much of an offensive liability. And you can talk about guys like Kanter. You can't leave him out there because of his defense. It's the same for Biyombo. He is just, he can't catch. He can't move. He can't do anything offensively. 9 points per 36 is putrid. 13 rebounds, great. 0.6 assists, that's Whiteside-esque. That is, it's a no, 0.4 steals, a horrible contribution. Yeah, 2.6 blocks is great. 54% from the field is great, but also a poor free throw shooter. So, yeah, he's going to be better than 180th, no doubt. Is he a top 100 player? There's probably a chance of that. But here's a question for you. Would you take him over Steven Adams, and should you?
Will I? No. Should you? No.
Will he and be? Will the he, other thing. Will he be ranked thing I like or about ADP
Steven
above that?
Adams? Go on, you broke up then.
I said, will he be ranked or have an ADP higher than Steven Adams? People went Biyombo crazy in the playoffs, like, and they went Adams crazy, but they went Biyombo like insanity crazy, and like this guy
well,
is
remember
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Biyombo is better than Nerlens Noel.
Apparently so. There was a great trade poll today. Would the should the Sixers trade Nerlens Noel for Sean Livingston?
What was that about?
I've no idea. And why was 20% voting yes? I don't know what was going on with that poll. It was not normal. Anyway, go on. What were you going to say with Adams?
Yeah. The other thing I forgot to mention about Steven Adams for head-to-head leagues, the amount of quality games that the Thunder have, he's almost, you could bump him up a round or two just on the fact that he plays on those quiet days. And then, yeah, if you've got KD or Russell Westbrook, and then you can throw in Steven Adams and he gets you 12 points and 15 rebounds on a Thursday night, or sorry, a Friday night, or whatever quiet days they are.
Yeah,
it makes your team look a lot better.
Now, we haven't seen this yet, but I think that the NBA is going to go even harder on what they did last year and spread the games out. We used to see the season before, two games on a Thursday, maybe three. Last year, five, six. I think they go a lot harder with that and start spreading the games out even more, and that almost nullifies the quality game argument. And we haven't seen that yet. That might not be the case, but I think we're going to see less 12, 13 game days and less 2, 3 game days and have more 5 to 8 type game days, which is perfect for DFS, and it will eliminate that quality game portion of drafting, because if you've got 8 games on a day, you can fill 10 active spots. Well, you won't have games left over on the bench, most likely. And that's the concern. And then, yeah, on a quality game day, every day will be relatively similar. I can see them going that way. It's a bit gut feelish, but it's just something that we need to watch when that schedule announcement comes out.
Good point. Yep.
A couple of guys left on our list here. We've got a couple of blokes from your team, Maddie. Let's start with TJ Warren, who I think the Suns didn't acquire a small forward in this draft unless they decide to play Bender or Chris there, which would be a mistake in my opinion. PJ Tucker is old and not that good, and TJ Warren was showing signs last season of breaking up before breaking his own foot. He was 180th last season. There was a lot of preseason hype about him before last season, about picking him at the end of drafts, but what he showed last season makes me get pretty excited, because he was able to add things to his game. And I'm always excited about young players to do that, because he hit, I think, 2 threes in his rookie season and started hitting like half a game last year, half a three a game, which doesn't sound like much, but when you're going from literally zero to hitting half a game, much like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist did, it's impressive. He's a high field goal percentage guy. He's a good scorer. He started getting steals in bunches as well. I think that he is a real chance to crack the top 100 and, you know, potentially even have a much better season than that. This is his real time to really show the Suns that I am your small forward. Don't draft one next season.
Yeah, he has to be. PJ Tucker's in the last season of his contract. TJ Warren, who they spent... drafted 14th?
14, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of seasons ago, really strong field goal percentage from a wing player as well, above 50%. Good points. But yeah, just needs to increase those rebounds, defensive stats and threes, as you said. So hopefully this is the season where TJ Warren really takes over that small forward position and really becomes fantasy relevant.
His per 36s last season, 17 with a 3 a game, which is probably the most impressive thing there for him given his season before. 4.9 rebounds, 1.2 steals, half a block, 50, 70, and 40 from three was his percentage split last season. So really efficient, and you're really excited to see what he can do moving forward. I think he is a great pick for one of those last two picks in your draft, because you would think, or you would hope that Earl Watson goes, okay, let's just get this guy in there. Let's see what he can do. PJ, you've been a great servant to the team, but you're not going to be on the next playoff team that's in Phoenix, and let's get TJ out there and start running. running what could be our best lineup. We've got another guy who I did touch on in the fourth year breakout pod, so you can talk at length about the Ukrainian monster, Alex Len, who came in 189th last season, took a big jump after the trade of Markieff Morris, and then was, I think it's fair to say, he was horribly used by Earl Watson.
Yep.
And that is the concern. Will Watson continue to just massacre what Len does best? But you would think with the drafting of Chris and Bender that he won't.
You'd like to, excuse me, you'd like to think not. Also depends what the Suns do in free agency, whether they sign another power forward. Probably likely that they bring Paletovic back, but not that he's going to eat too much into Alex Len time. And also depends what they do with Tyson Chandler. But yeah, just the 9 points, 7.5 rebounds, not even a block a game last season from Alex Len. Went from 1.5 down to 0.8 blocks, and increased his playing time by a minute. So yeah, another guy who the Suns heavily invested in with pick 5 in the 2013 draft. And yeah, coming into his fourth season, this really needs to be a big year from Alex Len.
Do you think he's good?
I do think he's good. I think he's got a lot of skills. He's got really good hands for a big man. Quite nimble on the court. And the other thing is he's had a lot of injuries, so he hasn't had the chance to train and learn and play and experience the NBA, not just from a personal level, but with the team, with his teammates, you know, training on the court, off the court. So he's had a lot of interruptions. Did play the 78 games last season, which was a good sign, and hopefully he can build on that and stay injury-free next season.
Now, the two things that were a real disappointment from him last season are two things that I think can be basically tied together, and tied together with the way that he was used by Earl Watson, and that is his lack of blocks and his horrific field goal percentage. He played away from the basket on both ends. He played, I think, more minutes than the season before, but got almost half the amount of blocks because he was playing as a four, guarding smaller stretch guys, which is just not what he can do. It's not what he should be doing. You play him close to the rim, and he's back to... Last season, I think he had a stretch, and not the season just passed, the one before, he had a stretch in like April, or March or April, or maybe February, where I think he had 6 blocks in a game 4 times in about 2 weeks. He can be a rim protector. But when you're standing out on the perimeter guarding stretch fours, you're not blocking shots. When you're standing out on the perimeter, when you can't be in the paint because Tyson Chandler can't shoot more than about 3 centimeters, which for you Americans is about an inch, if you look at his shot chart and you'll see that the concentration of shots moves from being under the rim to being 10 feet away, 12 feet away. It's a big change in what he does, and it's going away from what he does well. And playing him as the center and moving Chandler on, or putting Chandler in a backup role, Len's blocks will come back up. His field goal percentage should... Now, he missed a lot of bunnies at the rim as well. I'm not saying it's all to do with that, because he missed a lot of piss-easy putbacks and layups that he should hit. But it probably took 4-5% away from his total field goal percentage, probably took half a block away from his block totals, playing as a power forward for the majority of his minutes during... I should check whether it was the majority of his minutes, but it would be pretty bloody close. He never would have played that much at power forward throughout his career. And I think that... And you watch probably more Suns games than I did. Is that a decent way of looking at those two deficiencies in his game?
Yeah, and it was strange because last offseason they were talking about Alex Len adding a three-point range to his game and doing more things outside of the paint, and let's just get the fundamentals right first. And just going back to you said about his blocks, he had 6 blocks and then 2 games of 5 blocks, so what's that, 16 blocks in 4 games, and then again that was in January, and then in February he had 6-1 and 6 blocks in 3 games there, so he was averaging over 2 blocks a game in about 25 minutes. So he can be a shot blocker.
Yeah, absolutely. The last couple of players we've got on our list are all big men as well. The first one of those we're going to talk about is in Denver, and it is Yusuf Nurkic, who had so many knee problems last season and then was usurped by a rookie sensation in Nikola Jokic. But Nurkic is not a slouch. He's not a scrub. He was a super talented player the year before who was... We talk about big men being mismanaged. The way that Brian Shaw treated Yusuf Nurkic was horrible in his rookie season. He came back and had to play behind Jokic and battled with a lot of knee problems. Now there's the possibility that him and Jokic play together, which is a much better combination than, say, Alex Len and Tyson Chandler, because Jokic can do stuff on offense and Len can't. But Nurkic, we had a report today, he's lost 35 pounds already. He must have been a pretty chunky-ass guy last season if he's already lost those 35 pounds, and he's got really, really good upside, and it's all going to depend on how they run that rotation. I think they should be phasing Kenneth Fareed out and moving him into a sixth man role and playing more Jokic at the four, but Nurkic gets back to 27 minutes. It's top 70 probably written all over it, I'd say.
Yeah, he had a lot of hype coming into the start of last season. As you said, with those injuries, just played 32 games. Still only 21 years old right now. He'll be 22 when the season comes around. But hopefully, yeah, we do see that Nurkic-Jokic combination. And yeah, with Emmanuel Mudiay, Denver have a really good young core there. And hopefully they can start to put it together and we get some fantasy stats out of it as well.
Well, if you look at his punting ranks at the 8-2s, yeah, per 36 for the season, Yusuf Nurkic was 47th. Yeah, he did all what he did. He got like 1.5 blocks a game in 17 minutes. So there's a real chance he's a 2-block per game guy and an 8-rebound guy. His percentages were pretty poor. 62 from the line, 42 from the field. There's improvement there, but he can be a real stat producer. And if something happens to Jokic, which we don't want to happen, but and then Nurkic is forced into a full-time 32-minute role or something, he's going to go through the roof. He's really good, and he is out of the collective consciousness of a lot of people because of the way and how poorly he played and because of how well Jokic played as well, and because Denver's, honestly, they're a team that's pretty far down the national consciousness. Really interested to see what he can do. Not quite as interested as I am in Clint Capella in Houston. Dwight is gone. We know that. Their other centers on the roster consist of Chinonu Onwuaku, who is a second-round rookie who I do really like. But Capella, again, that theme played out of position at power forward a lot of the season. He'll move back to the center, and he has got comfortable top 100 upside, I would say, Matt.
He does. He has breakout written all over him. His per 36 last season with 13 points, 12 rebounds, and 1.4 steals, so awesome steals for a big man. Combine that with his 2.3 blocks, awesome field goal percentage. Now, he is going to hurt your free throw percentage, so give him a discount in your roto leagues. But he is going to be, massively, massively sought after on draft day. It's going to be a bidding war. See who can get in first to land Clint Capella.
Almost roto leagues, you almost can't deal with him in a rotisserie league. He was a negative 2.2 for free throw percentage. And again, when you're outside negative two, it becomes real tough to deal with. You need to pair him with Harden, basically, or maybe Durant to get that back, or just really go heavy free throws with a lot of other players, and that can leave you short in other areas. So he's an avoid for me in that area, but he can block. He can get stacks of rebounds, stacks of steals, great block numbers, huge field goal percentage. We talk about Bismack Biyombo's field goal percentage. Well, Capella will get a higher field goal percentage, and he did last season, and shoot more attempts. And yes, 38% from the free throw line is dreadful. It's also better than the 17 he shot the season before, but he has got big, big breakout written all over him. He'll be drafted in every single standard league, and he has a little bit of overdraft warning on him, but not quite as high as some of those other guys like Biyombo and Adams, because I think that we're sitting here 12 months from now, we're talking about Capella, and he could have easily finished the season as a top 50 guy if you're discounting his free throw percentage. He might not be fully in the conversation with Jordan and Drummond and Whiteside and those guys. And Howard, will he be better than Dwight Howard next season?
I want to say yes.
I want to say yes. It'll be close, because Howard was, much like the pencil, Matt, Howard was good, but just cops a mountain of shit. And we look at him and go, well, you're not the best center in the game. You're not the best defensive player we'd seen for 20 years or 10 years, however, because he was just that good. And he's not that guy anymore, but he's still good. He's still a starter in the NBA. He's still an upper echelon, top third starting center in the NBA. But given his reputation, given his unlikability, given the fall that he's had, you wouldn't think it. So it'll be tough. I reckon they'll probably be in a 5 to 10 spot range, excluding free throw percentage next season. So it is an interesting one, but there is no chance that Howard is back in Houston. He has declined his player option. One name that I did chuck in late, because we heard some news today that this time tomorrow he could be a member of the New York Knicks, and that's Joakim Noah, who apparently has a midnight meeting scheduled with Phil Jackson. I'm not really sure what the Knicks thought process is this season. I maintain that Kristaps Porzingis is a center. I don't hate bringing Noah in there on a short-term deal, because Noah's body is not going to enable him to play 32 minutes a night. But he'll never be that top 30 guy he was in his all-defensive player of the year type seasons, but he should be able to regain standard league relevance in 26, 27 minutes a night if he can get to that, if his body allows it.
Yeah, that was the key, if his body allows it, if he can stay fit and healthy. But yeah, it wouldn't be the worst option with having Noah coming off the bench, as you said. Start Porzingis, Melo, get a couple of wings, have Noah coming off the bench, and if they do want to play the triangle or some sort of version of the triangle, you don't get much better passing big men than Joakim Noah.
That is absolutely the way they should do it to me, Matt. Is Melo 4, Porzingis 5, get some wings. Yeah, sign Langston Galloway, make him the starting 2. I've got no problem with them doing that. Rose at the 1. I think Rose is a name we could have possibly had in this list, Matt, of players who could have a bounce back. And don't think he's ever going to be a top 50 guy again, but he could easily find himself inside the top 80. It might be a stretch, but he looked decent in the second half of last season. And he fits only certain teams in fantasy, but Noah, off the bench, they probably wouldn't sign him to a $16 million, $18 million deal, which might be the number they're looking at to come off the bench. But Porzingis is a center. That is how they should be doing it. I'm sure Phil Jackson disagrees with me, but his team building record has not been the greatest so far, so he doesn't get a free pass from me, and he shouldn't get a free pass from you, because you can talk about Porzingis not being up to it, but we heard it last season. He's not ready. He was more than ready. He's a center. He was better as a center last year than he was as a power forward. He is a center. He is a matchup nightmare as a center, and the Knicks would win a lot more games if they played him and Melo as the 4 and 5, but I don't think they'll go that way, unfortunately.
And one last guy that I just wrote down as well, Mario Hezonja.
Ah, yes.
They're in Orlando with Depot going out. Wait and see what the Magic do there on the wings. Need to re-sign Evan Fournier. But you'd expect, Hezonja to, right now, start at shooting guard. That could change in 24 hours or when you guys are listening to this. And if Gornan signs, I don't know, Danny Green or someone, or traded for Danny Green.
Eric Gordon.
Who was that? Eric Gordon,
yep.
Did you say?
Yep, Eric Gordon is a guy that could get Chandler Parsons and put Fournier to the 2 as well. That's a possibility. But I agree, at this early point, Hezonja's a guy that you want to be grabbing with those last couple of picks. If we look on, and I haven't looked at this, I probably should look at it. I'll look at it now. In the games where he played 30 minutes plus, he averaged 14, 4.5, and 3 in 34 minutes, shot 51% from the field, shot 40% from 3, and didn't miss a free throw in those 8 games where he played over 30 minutes. So you looked really good in those games. It was a plus 5.7 as well. So was a key guy. And if he gets 30 minutes plus, which, again, depending on what they do, then I've got a fair bit of confidence that he will be a top 100 player. And I've got his jersey hanging up behind me, actually, for that reason. I did mean to talk to him, and I forgot that it was there. So thank you for bringing that to my attention, Matt. We're going to talk fan essentials. We're going to give you the questions, which are presented to you by Fan Essentials. Each week, I will pick one listener who provides the question of the week, and they will get a free month of Fan Essentials. Last week's winner was Jason Rosenberger. So, Jason, you will get your free months of Fan Essentials. Fan Essentials, basically, you get your favorite NBA team's merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep. On fanessentials.net, go and check it out. All you do, you pick your favorite sports team. Every month, you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find all the sports gear for you. I think last month's Grizzlies one was fantastic. A huge banner flag, a bobblehead as well. They find all the stuff, they put it in a box, they send it to your house. It's a great gift idea for anyone in your family who's a sports fan. The price has started just $34.99, but that's not the price you have to pay, because you can use the Red Rock promo code, and that is Red Rock, of course, one word, and get 30% off for your first month. And you submit questions and you can win a free month also. It doesn't get any better than that. Visit fanessentials.net to get all the essentials you need. Let's get into these questions, Matt. The first one comes from our favorite VP. He says, Chris Middleton was a beast last year. It should continue again. Agreed? I can't say why not. He is extraordinarily underrated, Chris Middleton.
Agreed. It's all about Giannis, Middleton, and Jabari Parker there in Milwaukee, all three. How about all three will have top 60 fantasy value this year? What do you reckon, Charlie?
Two of them guaranteed. Yeah, I'd say you probably got about a 40% chance of that happening, but it's not outlandish. But Middleton and Antetokounmpo, no worries. They've both got the potential to be top 20 players, which might seem like hyperbole, but we know that Giannis could be a top 10 guy, and Middleton had big stretches last season where he was a top 10 guy. He was absolutely superb, and the amount of ridiculous trades, including Chris Middleton, that have floated around on many sites and Twitter and Facebook throughout the offseason were like, do you guys know who Chris Middleton is? Do you know how good this guy actually is? A guy who's a lockdown defender, hits threes, handles the ball, scores. You don't find these guys. And yes, he was a second round draft choice that was a throw in the Brandon Jennings deal. Just one of the best result trades of recent memory. And in the trade where with him, Brandon Knight and Brandon Jennings, Chris Middleton was the throw-in, and he's comfortably the best player now. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. His passing also is highly underrated. The four assists
awesome.
Last season from a shooting guard small forward position on your fantasy roster is highly valuable.
The next question comes from Danny, who's on Twitter at StroSwift, and he says, is Johnny O'Brien a chance to rise up? Well, Danny, thanks for being a smart ass for a start. Johnny O'Brien got cut today, so commiserations go out to Job, one of the players in the second season of this podcast that I was just on Jason Kidd's back about every day. Like, why is Johnny O'Brien starting? He finally realized that he's not good, and now they finally realized that he's not NBA caliber. So him and Damian Inglis, who I thought was a bit unfair giving him just the one season, Inglis, and yes, he was atrocious, but surely he deserved more than one season. But O'Brien's gone, he's on waivers. Whether he finds a spot somewhere else remains to be seen. But Danny also asked a semi-serious question. Well, no, a serious question. How many minutes does Olynyk need to crack top 100? We talked about that before. He doesn't need 30 to get to top 100. He probably only needs 25. And how many will he get? That's the million-dollar question, Danny. We don't know at this point. And we covered that earlier on. And lots of moving parts in that Boston front court. Matt Dean Vasek says, is Lou Amundsen a chance to rise up from rank 446 this upcoming season?
No.
Thank you. Thank you, Dean, for throwing your standard Lou Amundsen. If I see Lou Amundsen, I'll take a photo with him for you when I'm over at Summer League.
Dean's just tweeted another question about Lou Amundsen. Which suitors meet up with Lou Amundsen at midnight tonight? Well,
Melbourne Tigers.
Dean, you might know because you'll probably be there with him. Isn't Dean his manager?
Yeah, he's his PR guy.
Yeah.
Has to be. The last question is, I might not have shown you this question, but I'll ask it anyway. John Murphy says, in leagues that go 250 plus deep, are you more or less likely to take a chance on a second or third year player like Moutier that has a lot of risk in multiple categories? So we're not talking standard, we're talking really deep. Are you more or likely to take a risk? And I'll narrow the question down. Are you more or less likely to take an earlier risk on one of those guys in a deeper league?
Good question.
It's a great
Mr.
question.
Murphy. It really depends how the start of my draft is going.
Yeah,
I don't
want
to take too many risks early. Who's a good example? If I'm taking, say, Kawhi Leonard, who we know has had, might play 60, 70 games a season, then I'm probably less likely to take a risk with someone else later in the draft. If I'm taking Steph Curry, James Harden, Kevin Durant, who you can just lock in for 75, 80 games, and you can rely on them, then I am probably more likely to take a Moutier, a Derek Rose, those sort of guys who could, yeah, be a boom bust type player. But it also depends if Moutier falls to 150, sure, I'll take him there. If he goes at 95, I won't be disappointed. So I know that's a hard one to answer, but yeah, it's really just depending on the day, knowing your league mates, depending on settings, just seeing how things go, and being flexible during the draft. And yeah, like Josh said, if he does fall down, take him. If he goes earlier, then so be it. There's always going to be someone in those later rounds who you can grab.
John, the way I look at it is the deeper you go, this is the way that I tend to approach drafts, is that you want to go your first couple of picks, I want safety. You know, they don't have to exceed their draft spot. They can even drop two or three. But you don't want them dropping 30 or 40. The middle range, that sort of round two to round four, if they jump up, great, but maintaining value is probably most important to me. The later rounds,
yeah,
is where you're taking flyers for jumping up. But if you go from 130 players deep to 250, you're extending all of that. So those top 50 guys where you when you draft inside the top 50, I want my guys to retain value in the top 50. That then extends out to be the top 100, because it's the same amount of players at your first four or five players. It's harder to take a risk in your first four or five players. So I'm probably less likely to take riskier players in a deeper league around that spot. So say Moutier is going at 90 in a standard league, that's a fine place to take a risk on him. At 90, fine. If he doesn't work out, see you later. If he does work out, maybe I've got a top 50 guy on my hands. In a 250 deep league, at 90, that's your fourth player. It's not your seventh. It's not your eighth player. It's your fourth player. And if your fourth player doesn't pan out, you're in a fair bit of trouble. So I'm less likely to take a risk. But again, it does depend on what I've done early. If I've gone risky early, which I do try to avoid, then there's no way I'm going risky. If I've gone just super solid and are pretty happy with those picks, then maybe I take that punting upside. But I'm more likely to look at it and say, yeah, I'm treating this as my first four picks, which it actually is. And therefore, I want stability and I want more consistency, and I don't want to have someone who's got a 50% chance of being much worse than this. Make sense? You still there, or did I bore
Crystal
you?
Crystal clear. And yeah, it's also it's also about everyone wants to take that guy who from the third or second round who's going to jump up into the first round, but it's also just as important not to draft the guy who's going to be a bust.
Yeah, exactly.
So whether that's Serge Ibaka or Carmelo Anthony, it's harder with guys who get injured like Blake Griffin, but don't be afraid to play safe in that first, second, third, fourth round. If you pick a guy at 20 and he gives you back top 35 value, you haven't lost out. But if you pick him in the second round and he becomes a 60, 70th ranked player, then you're almost stuffed. So, yeah, don't be afraid to just play it safe in those first few rounds. And then, yeah, you can take those bigger risks later on and hopefully get a CJ McCollum or maybe go for a Nikola Mirotic around early because you have played it safe earlier on in the draft.
Yep, exactly. And just touching on that Noah thing, apparently the rumor is that Noah is ready to sign with the Knicks for $18 million per season. So, yeah, I think I said $18 million, so I'm pretty happy with that. And I'm not sure what the Knicks are. And now Mark Berman's just tweeted, actually, Noah's meeting will be Friday day, not at midnight. So we might not hear it until we wake up Saturday morning to hear the results of that. Anyway, Matt, I think we are done. Have you got, this is a completely a random question, have you got one free agency prediction?
Yes, this was a question without notice. One free agency. Kevin Durant will stay with the Thunder, and I'm secretly hoping that, just for no real particular reason, but I got a mate who's a Dallas fan, I'd like to see Hassan Whiteside with the Mavericks.
Yeah, I like that. It feels like that Whiteside is gone from Miami. There's also rumors that Wade is not happy, but this happens every season, that Wade gets upset with the initial contract discussions, goes and speaks to other people and then comes back. But there's always something interesting happening. The rumors of Zach Lowe today, of Al Horford to Detroit. It's going to be interesting. It might end up being a fizzer and everyone going back to their own teams. but it's going to be some don't overreact to big contracts. When the pencil gets 22 million a year, don't lose your shit about it, because it's just going to happen. And to actually get to the salary floor, it's going to be a challenge for some of these teams. So money's going to go around. It is what it is. Just deal with it. And yes, you'll be able to throw out any comparison. I can't believe this guy's getting this much and this other player's getting this much. Cool. Completely different environment. Can't compare it. Don't lose sleep over it. Just enjoy the madness and then try and get ready for next season and for Summer League. If any of you will be at Summer League, I will be there. So make sure you say hello at Vegas Summer League. I'll be there from the first day. So yeah, if you're there, send me a tweet. Let me know and I'll try catch up. Say hello. Matt, thank you for coming onto the show today.
Thanks, Josh, and I'll just stay here in cold Australia and do my thing back here. And yeah, follow me on Twitter at SmanSports. Josh and I will try to cover free agency as much as possible and any moves and fantasy value changes that occur. So yeah, get involved on Twitter and agree, disagree, argue.
Probably having about two or three free agency podcasts before I head off to Summer League, and then most likely, almost definitely, be having a podcast from over there as well, and hopefully chatting to a few players while I'm there and getting some maybe snippets of interviews onto the show too. But we'll see how that all works out. Matt, thank you again for coming on. It's been great to chat to you. Great to break down all these breakout players potentially.
Thanks, Josh. Hope everyone, wrote some of them down, and hopefully we're right come this time next year.
Let's hope so. We are done. Follow me on Twitter, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, give us a review, give us a ranking, check out Basketball Monster, Fantrax, Fan Essentials, you know all the places, you know all the codes, check it all out. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.